No, Arlen, you're right. Women can't be hell priests.
It's a thing.
Right, laying that down right now.
It's a thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that I said, unironically, with no...
I mean, it's a new thing, but it makes sense. It's officially part of the list of things that women aren't allowed to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to get out in front of this right now and just say this. I think Jamie Clayton's performance is kind of better than Doug Bradley's.
Oh, yeah. There's nuance to it. I don't think we should talk about this too much just because
I want to skirt stuff and not really reveal anything, but like, holy shit. Anyway, hey, everybody, welcome to After Dark. We're going to be probably talking about horror movies a lot.
Children of the Night.
And Eric and Arlen are here. Connor's here. That's me. I watched a Hellraiser movie in the year 2022 and wasn't miserable.
I mean, that in and of itself is an accomplishment. So, yeah, congratulations to them. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and you know, we've been talking about this for a while. We've talked about Hellraiser many times over the years, and
yes,
the fact that it eventually emerged into, oh, a new movie's out and it's good is like amazing, kind of. So,
it's not even just good, like it's so spot on with what it's like doing and like what it's expanding on, and like I loved almost everything about it. The only hang up I had, I said on Facebook, was I don't like some of the designs of Cenobites. They don't you kind of like, you see and you go, all right, I already forgot what that looks like.
See, for me, I felt like that was okay, because I mean, this is essentially just a reboot of the entire thing.
Yeah, it didn't really bother me. It just, I kept noticing it, and like some of them looked tiny, like the way they're being framed. And
I saw the shot you were talking about. Yeah, I know exactly what shot you're talking about. I think it was just a bad choice camera wise. That was it. Like, yeah, it's relatively minor, so I understand why you said like it's a weird thing, but yeah, I don't want to dip too much into it because Arlen hasn't seen it yet, but there's definitely things that I wasn't a huge fan of, but it was, I don't know, it's hard to explain without saying anything more, so I will just say I thought it was okay, and I feel like maybe this director just doesn't click for me as much as I thought he would, because I really like The Ritual, but I thought The Night House was doo-doo garbage. So I don't know. He's kind of one for three for me at this point.
I love this, but I got to say that the main characters, the survivors essentially, aren't really likable for me. And I kind of don't like any of them.
Yeah, they're not likable, and that's one of my big problems. But yeah, I would say everybody should still go watch it, and I think they introduced a lot of really cool ideas and new mythos that seem to fit perfectly.
Also, they go right for the jugular in terms of like if they go from where Hellraiser 1 to Hellraiser 2 went in two movies in like an hour.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I mean, I think you will enjoy it, Arlen. I'll just be curious to hear your opinion on some of the things that maybe you saw or did not see that I didn't like. But yeah, the new mythos is great.
Yeah, I'll be very shocked if I just hate it. That would really shock me. I am generally a fan of just about everything Bruckner has ever done. And I would take apart that statement a little bit, Eric. How many of his other anthology stuff do you distinctly know that you've seen? I know that we've had disagreements about the VHS movies in the past, but he's done a lot of anthologies. Yeah. He did, what was it? Southland? Not Southland.
Oh, Southbound?
Southbound. He did a big, I think the wraparound segment in Southbound.
I was going to say, he definitely did not do Southland Tales.
Southbound is the, it's like the, it's
yeah, I know, Southwest I know exactly theme. What you're talking about. I wasn't really into that. I don't know what it was, but just, it didn't click for me. Like a lot of the shorts that I remember from that, they felt very mean for mean's sake, and that was it. They didn't feel like they earned anything that they did in them.
That's fair. I actually have problems with that as well, but I liked his wraparound segment, I think.
I can't remember.
It's like an opening, and then it's like people like getting like brutally murdered, like this is like the opening of the movie. And then one of the murders is being like followed by something, and that leads into the rest of the movie. And then it sort of has like a, but other than that, he's done a lot of the stuff. I think he did he do the VHS segment with it's the guys who were like going out to make their own bang bus thing. I think that was him.
Oh, the I Like You. I
don't remember that at all.
Isn't that that's
the one where the girl's face splits open?
Yeah, she turns.
Yeah,
I Like You. Yeah, that was that. Enjoyed that. I thought that was good. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a couple of those. We've talked about Night House before. I still think a lot of that movie really rules for me personally.
I think a lot of it's good, but I think the ending is it just it that movie was so atmospheric and so creepy, and then when you find out what's going on, it lost the plot for me. I just couldn't get into it anymore.
To that and Men, I haven't seen that yet either.
I haven't seen Men yet. I want to. My wife really wants to see it too. I'm surprised it's not streaming anywhere yet.
Men is an experience.
I had a feeling it would be just because that it gave me that Hereditary vibe where I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but it's bothersome.
It's Alex Garland. I'm not surprised. It's very like I don't know how to explain this well.
No, I can't. If I say anything, it will ruin the best moments of the movie. If I say anything, it will ruin the parts of the movie where it's like, you're either in or you're out. There's going to be a moment where you're like, oh, I want to turn this off. Or you're going to be like, oh, this is aggressively my shit. And
okay.
It leads to the aggressively my shit category once I got past that moment. And there's just visuals that I never thought I would see on screen. That's the most I can say. Things where it's like, this is not where I expected my life to go in this moment.
Jesus.
I did not expect to be here today, but I'm here and
I was not ready for today.
Well, since Hunter didn't get around to seeing it, cause, he's a scary boy. I guess we could talk about Black Phone a little bit, since I know all three of us have seen that.
I love that movie. I saw it 2 days ago, and one of my favorite things about it, I was thinking about it, it kind of feels like a Twilight Zone episode or something, because it's so self-contained, and there's some wacky shit going on, and they're just like, yeah, don't bother. We're just going to get you through this, okay?
Twilight Zone's that's a good comp. It's because it is so insular, but it does feel like it's there are themes that could be carried through. It's not, you know, thinking back on other Derrickson stuff, I don't think it's my favorite Derrickson that he's done, specifically in like the horror category. I actually think that's the movie with David Banner.
I can't remember it. Yeah, the one with the cop and the priest. Yeah.
Yes, that one fucks hard. Infernal. Joel McHale gets stabbed at one point.
Oh God, he does. So, that guy stole my dad's career.
I think I've ever seen him in trouble in a movie.
No, he's like the crappy partner. He's like the jokey partner who like makes jokes and they talk about how much they like creatine and stuff. Like he's that character in the movie.
It's Deliver Us From Evil.
Yes, Deliver Us From Evil. That's probably my favorite of the Derrickson films. But on that line of knowing it's a Derrickson film, I still think it's enjoyable for the things that I like about Derrickson's movies. But I wouldn't say that I love all of his stuff. I think he always has an interesting way of displaying the visuals that he wants to show and making them feel not real, but like they feel like they're taken directly from your dreams in a lot of sequences. But he also really likes to use music in interesting ways. But there's other stuff that
Sinister
I don't
really has the really coolest love. Fucking score, and the way they use it is awesome.
It's very good. But there's other stuff like I don't like the moments where his his strong Catholicism just really bleeds through the movie. Just is like, there it is. There's the moment I've been waiting for where it's going to come through, and you being a man of faith and all that. And it's like, and I don't mind him being a man of faith. It's just the way in which it comes through in every single one of his movies. I think what I maybe appreciate the most about Sinister is that that's not there. It's no, very instead much,
you get a man, a character who is unironically named Bagul.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was trying to do the mental gymnastics to remember if there was anything like that in Sinister, so I'm glad you confirmed that there wasn't. Yeah, I don't know, for Black Hat, like, I really like the stuff with the
kid. Michael Mann film? The Michael
Mann. Oh, no, Black Hat. No.
Best movie ever made in
Not Cherry Own.
Yeah, god damn it. His ears
just opened up.
God damn it. God damn it. Black Phone. First off, the reason why I think both of you are getting that, like, compartmentalized, like, feel for it is because it was based on a short story. Like, yes. it was one of Joe Hill's, like, first short story compilations, which the short story is really good. Like, I read that entire book, and he's as talented as his dad is when it comes to short stories. But yeah, when with that movie, like, the things I liked most were the kid and Ethan Hawke, like, working off of each other.
Yeah.
Everything else surrounding it, I could really do without. Like, the sister character felt like she was too over the top for me at times. And I know she wasn't, like, doing that, like, on screen, like, you know, over the top acting, whatever, but just what was happening with her was just a little bit too much for me to swallow. I don't know. I wanted to like that movie so much, but just so much of it was not working for me that I was like, all right, I know this is a good movie, but it isn't my thing. Because it's been universal praise, so I know it's me. It's not the movie itself. I'm not one man fighting a crusade against it. So
no, I can definitely meet you in the middle there. Like, I found the sister went on a little bit too long, but at the same time, I understand, like, the technical plot reasons for why she's there. So... Right.
Well, and I'm just using her as an example. Like, I mean, pretty much anything that wasn't Ethan Hawke and the kidnapped kid and all of their stuff, I could throw out the fucking window. I don't care.
So even the past kids, because I really liked that.
Well, stuff. the past kid stuff in context to what was happening while he was there, like everything with the kidnapped kid and him being in Ethan Hawke's basement.
Right. Cool. Yes.
Great. All that stuff I fucking loved. Right. But like I said, everything surrounding that, I just...
You have the problem that a lot of people have with 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I don't have, which is most people would prefer that there be no aliens in that movie whatsoever.
Oh, I don't mind that at all.
No, I'm just saying as an example. Yes. Like, for most people, they're like, fuck that movie for doing aliens in the last 10 minutes. I still love that choice. But, like, that is a common sentiment that you hear a lot. So I get it. I can feel you on that. And, like, I think I will say this. I prefer the sister stuff to, like, cutting away to the detectives being bumbling and dumb. They're still bumbling and dumb, even with the sister there. So, like, I appreciate the, like, not making cops out to be superheroes aspect of that. But at the same time, again, like, I can definitely see why that would be a problem for you. And it just didn't really bother me as much. But I did have, like, a moment. I was sitting in a theater watching that movie and being like, do we need this stuff with the sister? Is this actually essential to the movie?
Well, and I get why they had to put all that other stuff in, because the short story literally was just him in the basement and dealing with all that shit. Like, hell, I don't even think they brought up the facts or brought up the idea of him wearing masks at all, which I thought that was wonderfully creepy. Those masks Ethan Hawke were so killing good.
The movie without using his face?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I think he elevates a lot of that movie. I think he's a big part of why you know, like you said, most people really, really dug this movie. Is I think he kind of distracts from the parts that might slow other people down, and he's excellent in the movie. And you know, when I was listening to a KingCast, the interview with Derrickson months back now, I think he was talking about how Hawk is only in the movie for like 15 minutes or something. Something like that. It's a very like Silence of the Lambs type number where it's like he's only in there for a couple minutes. I just used him very well. I just, you know, strategically chose the right moments. And I think that's a lot about his performance.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was finishing the point. So yeah.
I love
that this movie is essentially resolved through like Monkey Island plotting. Essentially, it's like you have to get this item. It's hidden in that item. Okay, now hold on.
Yeah.
It's gonna come in handy in a couple hours.
Now you have to get the hair off the cat to make a fake mustache.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I'll hold this piece of lint for 3 days.
Right. Yeah. But it doesn't. It doesn't awaken the Home Alone alarms in your brain where you're like, what, you know. And I enjoy myself a good Home Alone at the end of a Bond movie, but it doesn't happen in this movie. You're like, oh, this feels believable. You buy it when at the end of the movie a child beats the hell out of Ethan Hawke.
Bamboobles the shit out of that guy.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
The two people who have punched Ethan Hawke the best this year, him and Oscar Isaac. They're in the same category. That's
like he goes down so easily. Like at some point I was like, this is a fake ending. Like they're gonna pull the rug out from underneath me because it went on for so long. I'm like, that is a curb stomp on the side.
Characters. I was expecting the classic alien, it's still there type situation, but no, it's just he doesn't even have to end up killing the doggo, doesn't he? He like just feeds him like the steak, right?
Yeah, he feeds him the steak he found in the freezer.
Yeah, perfect. Good doggo. Good. I did like the James Ransome character a lot. I do have to say.
I get excited when I see him show up somewhere because the first thing I say is Detective So-and-so, and I always forget his fucking name.
Well, he's Eddie for me forever. He's grown up Eddie for all time. That's just who he's going to be.
He's Eddie Brock? Oh, Black Phone is an MCU. It's a Sony film. Okay. No.
How dare you? Actually, it's Uncharted 3.
Nearly as much in common with Spider-Man as Morbius did.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no, like he's always gonna be grown up Eddie from It to me. He's him is the Cokehead brother thing I really liked, and this is where, you know, like the whole true crime part of my brain wakes up where it's like I really get into like how the details for this, they felt so real, and I get a kick out of that. The fact that it felt like this could have been a story about a real serial killer. And the believability there really sold the threat for me. And the fact that, like, we know from listening to actual true crime podcasts and interviews and documentaries, like, that kind of thing happens. Those kind of details are there. The serial killer often has, like, a weird screw-up brother who is into cocaine or something. Like it's just a detail that comes up again and again where it's like Robert Picton's brother was also a a biker or whatever or something like that. He also he was a pimp or whatever on this side of town. And so yeah, that added to some verisimilitude for me, and very enjoyable for me.
And please don't let anything I'm saying about how I didn't like it sway anybody's opinion of it or sway their choice to go see it. Like I said, I realized pretty early on, like, this isn't for me 100%, but it's still a well-made movie. So please go see it. It deserves all the attention it can get. And honestly, with good horror starting to peek its head out again, I'm kind of excited if anything, even if it's not for me, starts to do well. Like, it's... Go ahead.
I mean, I'm kind of befuddled that Hellraiser and Prey weren't in theaters. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's... I think Hulu is playing the safe game at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that plays into a larger thing, which I'll use to segue into the movie I want to talk about, which is theaters aren't getting any movies just from anybody. Nobody's giving them to them. So as a result, movies are staying in theaters longer than I've seen them stay there for a while. I mean, it hasn't been, you know, for like 4 or 5 years now where you could depend on a movie being there longer than a month or two. If it's not a, you know, a Disney movie, basically. And even that's changing. But like, I think Multiverse of Madness only left my local theater like a month ago or something. Or maybe that was Thor, one of the two. Actually, I could probably see one of them right now if I wanted to. I'm not going to look it up, but I think I could. But like, and that's the thing that's happening. So as a result, the movie that I'm going to implore you all to watch as soon as you fucking possibly can, Barbarian, has been in the theaters for a good 2 months now, I think.
I know nothing about this movie.
I'm trying not to learn anything about the movie, but like, I'm at a point now that I don't really go to the theater for like stuff like that. Like, I go to the theater for spectacle, and I enjoy watching movies like that. From everything I'm hearing about it, I enjoy watching that stuff more at home because I can absorb it a little bit better.
So I'm not going to say that this movie is horror as spectacle, because the best horror spectacle movie in recent years already came out and you already saw it, which was Nope. It's no Nope. Yeah, I guess that's what I'll stick with. It's not a Nope, but it is
not Nope.
It is the kind of holy shit that just happened movie. That I would recommend going to see it in a theater. If you don't, I understand.
I'm also reticent because so many people were like, Malignant's crazy. I'm so good. And my wife and I watched that, and we were like,
This is Barbarian's a better movie than Malignant.
Okay.
I don't think Malignant's a good movie.
Okay. I enjoy is wacky enough to be entertaining, but I don't really.
Yes,
I couldn't tell you much more about it.
I think Barbarian is like. I don't want to oversell it or hype up the expectations too much, but I wouldn't be surprised if a couple years from now we're talking about Zach Krieger or Krieger, whatever his name is. He's from Whitest Kids You Know. For people want to put a face to the name. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple years from now we're talking about him like we talk about a Juan
Jordan
or a Flanagan or
I was going to say a Jordan Peele. Yeah.
Yes. I wouldn't be shocked if a couple years from now we're like, this guy is one of the best making horror movies right now. Like, I'm serious about this. Like, it's. It was such a good experience for me. The filmmaking experience was, or the viewing experience was good. And then just, I think the film is really well made. I think it's really well done on a technical level from a story and plot point of view. Like, there are many ways in which I would call it a really perfect movie. And I'm going to make a comparison, and I don't want anybody to read too much into this comparison. But after you see it, you might. If the movie. I would call this the modern Texas Chainsaw Massacre. For a number of reasons.
That's very bold.
Yeah, but I think it's going to hold up. I think it's doing a lot of similar things. It's an interesting, compelling movie. And like, horror in theaters hasn't been, in my opinion, this grimy and like ooey in a very long time. Horror is very like sanitary now. Like, even movies with large sequences of gore and violence, they tend to really cut away from it. in modern horror, and like this movie has some moments that I haven't seen in film in cinema for a very long time. It's, you know, this kind of gore and this kind of violence has moved to TV almost entirely, or to like very small indie films that most people don't see in theater. So the fact that you could see the kind of stuff that is contained in this film in a theater is, I was genuinely shocked by it. I was like, I haven't seen a movie like this in a theater in a very, or well, actually ever, probably. I haven't seen one like this in a very long time. And I don't think a movie like this has been mainstream and promoted the way that Barbarian has been, and then gotten the good reviews that it has. Like, if this movie came out in the 80s, the far right, you know, culture critics would be fucking calling it like a devil worship picture. They'd be calling it all, they'd just be saying that it's the end of civilization or whatever. You know, Roger Ebert would be getting very upset about the movie. So yeah, like it's just doing a lot of things that I was very surprised by and compelled by. And maybe in a couple years after that surprise has worn off, my opinion might shift. But I'm telling you right now, it's one of the best horror experiences I've had in a really long time.
I mean, I think good horror comes more easily to people who have their feet in comedy pretty firmly, because it's very easy to go from, hey, that's funny, to, oh God, like that's mm-hmm. that, no, this is not right. Because especially with right. like coming from the whitest kids, and it was definitely like, I want to say like avant-garde to an extent and absurdist a lot of times. It's just mm-hmm. a hop and a skip over to well done horror, or at least horror that can be well done if you have the means to actually make it happen.
Mm-hmm. A lot of modern sketch comedy, it is only just one step away from that. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just one extra.
You know, on the subject of like really shocking, gory movies, I haven't talked about in the show yet, but The Sadness came out a few months ago, and boy, that fucking vanished into the wind.
Yeah, but I think there's
a... How do you remind it existed?
It's not good. It's not a pleasant experience for anyone, and I've read the crossed...
It's not very good, like... as a movie. It's got weird pacing, and like mm-hmm. The thing it's selling itself on like is very isolated instance of like that is incredibly fucked up. Mm-hmm. But most of it is like, I don't know, like this is just not doing it for me at all.
Isn't there a guy who's not under the effect of the stuff who talks about how much he enjoyed killing a baby? There's something along those lines.
I think it's like, isn't it toward the end with the dude who's like
living? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah. Like, there's like one particular thing in that movie that I was like, that did not need to come across my eyes, and that was the eye socket thingamajig. I was not happy after that.
I've heard about this, and it's like, yeah, and, you know, and I think we talked about this on the last episode. Like when somebody said, "Oh, this is." It's an adaptation of Cross. I was like, and there it is. That's why this clicked. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is why I want nothing to do with this. And we've talked to death about how much we love Shudder. I'm even like kind of disappointed in them for like promoting it as, you know, and being so like gung ho about it. And I get it. Shudder really likes to play to like the old school horror fans, the people who are like, Cannibal Feroz, it's not even that bad, bro. It's not even that gory.
Well,
about that movie.
But that's the thing. Like, I feel like stuff like Cannibal Ferox and like Cannibal Holocaust and some of that stuff that came out around then, those were outliers. Those weren't the norm. But I feel like there's been a weird switch, and especially within like Korean and Japanese, especially horror, it tends to really push the boundaries. So I feel like this is a more recent thing. Not, I don't know. I don't really think the old school analogy works. That's what I mean, is that analogy doesn't really work for Shudder. Like, it does for some of their stuff, but like for this particular thing, it's more that they know they're catering to the extreme shock people. Yeah. Like the people who would watch like a Takashi Miike like audition and be like, oh, that wasn't bad.
I think we're saying the same thing. Like, they're playing to that crowd, and they're really like trying to sell to that crowd. It's like, that's not most of the people that subscribe to your service. That's a segment.
Yeah, it's people like my coworker Tracy who would faint if they watched the
sentence. Right. You know, and yeah, there are people who I'm sure are really excited when they put Anthropomorgus on their streaming service. And I'm sure that's a sizable segment, but like, not everybody is that person. Not everybody is Joe Bob Briggs. Some of us just want you to tell us, is this movie that I've seen on Netflix 100 times good or bad? So that I can now watch it. Which has happened multiple times, where I see a movie for years and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to try that. And then it shows up on Shudder and I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, I'll give this a shot. I'm going to watch, This Message Is For You, or something like that, I think it's a movie called Stay in Your Homes, or just an example. A bunch of stuff has happened like that where I just don't check something out because I'm like, that could be really cheap and really bad just looking at the poster, and then Shudder puts it up. I'm like, oh, this is a good movie.
Oh, I might as well.
And
see, I've had the opposite with Shudder. Like, there'll be times I'll be looking through it and I'll be like, oh, I saw this on Netflix a while ago. I'm shocked this is here. Like, I think it's called A Dark Song is that one that the woman is working with like an alchemist or a wizard or something to try and summon an angel. Yeah, my wife and I watched that randomly on Netflix like 5 or 6 years ago, and we're like, oh, that was a surprise, and then I was shocked to see it again pop up on Shudder. So, but I totally get what you mean. Like, it's they definitely get stuff that it's like, no, you should probably check this out if you like horror. There's a reason why it's popped up here.
Mm-hmm. Something I was going to say about Sadness and Crossed is that, funny thing about that is that Crossed actually works better with the way, because it's a comic, and because like they use a lot of like, what's on the next page? Oh God, my eyes.
Right.
And like, Sadness is like, it's just, there's so fucking much of it, and it's just all over the place. At some point, it's like, you just lose focus. Like, towards the end of it, I was just drifting in and out of it. I was like, I don't know, it was just washing over me now. It's just kind of repeating itself.
Well, I have many, many thoughts on this. In the case of the comic, I can at least rationalize aspects of that based off of who was part of it, who created it, who's involved in the writing of it. The Sadness, after doing some research on it, it is technically a Korean movie. It's all Americans or Westerners behind the camera, though. It's all in the director.
Okay.
It's all white dudes. Okay. Wasps. It does feel like there's a degree of like, oh, you're just like using the Korean setting to like offset some of the pushback, I guess, or something like that. It feels like that. Like, people will expect this kind of violence more from a film coming from Korea, I guess, is what I would assume. Yeah. That's why they would do that.
That's the old
plan. Yeah, that makes sense. In a weird way, it's wearing yellow face. Yeah, you're using it. No, it is. I mean, it kind of is.
You know? And to be fair, The Raid is the same situation, but The Raid is good. So, good, it's fine, I guess.
But to get back to my much earlier point, it was that I feel like horror is, it's not having a resurgence. It's slowly like edging its way back into just films in general, because it was gone for a while, and it was making a slow comeback with like easy to approach stuff like Final Destination and things like that. But now it feels like, with the success of stuff like It and like more mainstream but kind of more horrific stuff, they're starting to actually take more chances with things coming out. So that's why something like a Barbarian comes out, or like Black Phone, or things like that. And it's I'm happy to see it happening. I have to accept the fact that, like, maybe my time of being super into horror was over. So I'm more selective about what I really like.
Well, I think that's a part of it, but we also have to look at the context of, you know, past periods of time. Like, you know, it's been discussed before. I use Letterboxd a lot just for practical reasons, just to like keep track of what movies I watch. And I was like looking through movies that are available on different streaming services, and it occurred to me as I was looking at the numbers that like there's a sharp drop off in just how many horror films were made based off of Letterboxd's cataloging from the 1980s to the 1990s. And it's not a small drop. It's like hundreds of thousands more horror movies that they have cataloged in the 80s than they do in the 90s. It's just, and that's economics. That's the way, that's the nature of the industry. A bunch of people had the money to make their own weird slasher knockoff movies in the 80s, and they didn't have that money in the 90s because people actually watched their films and decided how they felt about those films and didn't want to watch them anymore in the 90s. I think that what's happening now is a bunch of different factors. The economics of movie making have been pushing films towards the super low budget and the super high budget for years now. Horror is consistent, and there will always be an audience there for it, even if the studios aren't making the movies for them. Studios realize that if they make the movies for them right now, at the point in which they can afford to make 90% of what horror directors want to make, and they don't even have to like bother telling the horror directors what they want, because those horror directors have a built-in audience, most of the ones that you know, at least, and they just make the movie because many of them are professionals who have been in the business for years, or they're super indie. So they're going to make the movie for cheap. So like it's a confluence of events that makes it so that we're getting a lot of really good stuff at various levels in terms of budget and production. And you're getting to the point where movies are coming out that have very similar premises. They're about essentially the same thing. And if you don't like one, you can just wait for the next one to come out. Or the next movie with a similar premise. And you'll probably enjoy that one because that's how much of this stuff is being made. And that's just the US. When you expand to international, it's an even bigger market of people who are all making this stuff at the same time. And at very high levels of quality. I think we're just in a period where there's going to be a lot more really good horror being made. And I think it's going to last for a while because people have the ability to make these choices and to actually spend their money on this because they can't spend it on, I don't know, the Batman every single time.
Yeah.
They can't just do that over and over again and expect to get the same result each time. So,
yeah. So to not even segue, because there is no easy way to segue, and also announcing that you're going to segue is poor taste.
And yet somehow did it and both not did it.
Exactly. I am a conundrum. I am a question mark wrapped by an enigma, or is it the other way around? Anyways, I've been trying to watch horror movies every night in October just because I haven't done it in a while because I got burned out on it because it got old trying to find new stuff all the time because I was having that conundrum of like, oh, let's watch this. Oh God, that was garbage. Let's watch this. Oh, that was okay. Like one out of every like six movies ended up being something I really liked. Anyways, I for the first time ever, I watched The Shining and Dr. Sleep back to back and holy shit. It makes a great movie even better. And don't get me wrong, I love The Shining. I think it's great. But it makes Dr. Sleep into the best sequel that ever existed, I think.
Yeah.
Because because the last time I watched Dr. Sleep, I probably hadn't seen The Shining in like 3 or 4 years. So it's like, I still remembered things, but having it happen the night before and then seeing like the direct homage and clever ways that Flanagan like weaved stuff in from the movie and from The Shining, the movie, into Dr. Sleep, his adaptation of the book and the sequel to the movie, is amazing. It's just, it's so goddamn good. And I didn't realize how much of a good job he did with doing all of that.
It makes stuff like, cause I'm not terribly high on The Shining. I think it's fine. It just doesn't do anything for me. But like when they go back to the Stanley Hotel, I was like, all of a sudden this stuff just means more to me now. Cause I'm liking it. Yeah. I like this movie so much. So like it made just even referencing to it, I was like, that's just super interesting to me.
Yeah. No, honestly, I would encourage you, because I mean, that was when I saw you saying like, yeah, The Shining just doesn't do anything for me. Go back and watch it and then watch Dr. Sleep either the same day or the next day. It might actually make you like The Shining more just because.
I mean, it made me appreciate it more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's, I don't know. I was shocked at how much of a difference it made in my appreciation of Dr. Sleep. Which, I mean, I already would verbally fillet that movie anytime I could, so.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what else is out? Like, the movie we're all waiting for, Terrifier 2.
Nope, not doing this, you should be like, you should be more like me, all of you, and watch Room 237 at 3 a.m. at night. And just first watch time, it twice.
I love that fucking piece of shit documentary.
I did not like that.
It's a great documentary.
It's manic. It's insanity, but like watching it. Like,
no, it is insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the point of the thing.
I went into it expecting a much different documentary than it was giving me.
Right.
And I had such a like visceral reaction to that I was like, oh, I don't want to see this ever again. Like, because I went in expecting it to be approachable and not just, and this is what, like, just people rambling at you about why there's all these connections. Like, I couldn't deal with that. I could not deal with that approach.
That movie is full insanity. And surprise, surprise. It's the movie I watch the most when I'm feeling insane. As like a, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not.
Which
I'm not mentally wrong.
Which came first, watching this movie or the feeling of insanity?
The feeling of insanity came before.
You sound unsure of this.
I think watching Room 237, if you feel a little crazy, might make you feel a little better about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's how I feel about all of that director's work. It all, like, his stuff, that's what his stuff is about to me, is like exploring people who are a little bit out there, a little bit like.
Well, what else? What other documentaries did he do?
The Nightmare.
He did The Nightmare.
That's why I was excited about seeing this, and then was like, oh no, oh no, oh my, as my monocle went flying across the room.
I still think it's a perfect, like, I understand why it's the same guy completely. I completely buy why it's the same person. And he also did Primal Scream, which is like a short documentary about the old Screen Gems logo. And about how people have nightmares about that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he also did a short about the movie. I don't know if it's specifically about the movie Magic, but the movie Magic with Anthony Hopkins is featured quite prominently.
Yeah,
Hopkins
and the dummy. Yeah, and the ventriloquist dummy. Yeah.
And how there are people who have like memories of the commercial and like. And it ties into the nightmare. It ties back into the nightmare.
Interesting.
But he did a short about it. But yeah, and like he also did that Into the Matrix one.
Yes, which I was okay with that, but it was more the spectacle of like, oh people, what are you? No, yes. What are you doing?
But when you look at all of that together, it completely makes sense. All of it makes sense together as part of a larger career. It's like, oh, okay, this is a thing that he likes to explore. People who are. Their perception of the world is a little different. their perception of the world is informed by trauma and many other things that, that they've experienced in life.
Okay, knowing all this now and or being re-educated on it, because I totally forgot it was the guy who directed The Nightmare or the person who directed The Nightmare.
Yeah.
I might need to give it another go.
Yeah, and also okay. This 237, as crazy as those people are, it's the thing of, okay, they might be crazy, but they still do bring up legitimate points and things that are interesting.
Their observations aren't based on invisible things. Like, it's all stuff they can point out, but like when they start talking about it, you're like, this is what you think about when you watch this movie?
Right. Like, I don't take the guy who's talking about Jack reading a Playgirl, I don't agree with anything that he says. It's still fascinating that Jack is reading a Playgirl. That still is an interesting fact about the movie, and you can infer a lot of things about Jack as a character from the fact that he is clearly holding a Playgirl in the movie before speaking to Mr. Ullman. And the fact that Mr. Ullman says nothing about that. He sees the obvious Playgirl in his hand, and he's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Fuck it. I mean, you're probably going to die up here anyway, so I don't give a fuck. Which I did, real quick, back to the Shining. Man, I forgot how much of an unbelievable asshole Jack is from the drop.
Oh, yeah. Like, Stephen King is correct. His problem about... Yeah, that's correct.
The thing that I wrote, that was just me postulating, but I mean, if that is exactly why Stephen King said he didn't like it, like, I completely agree. But yeah, go ahead. No, what did he say?
He said many things over the year. He said many things over the years, but the main things are, he thinks that Stanley and him just come from different world perspectives. Stanley acknowledged, like, ardent atheist, didn't believe in an afterlife whatsoever. He had a conversation with Stephen over the phone. Like, he asked Stephen, do you believe in an afterlife? And Stephen said, yes. Yeah, I do. And Stanley's response to that was, And then he hung up.
Okay.
So that tells you a lot about him.
Cooper does seem like a guy who would tell a kid that Santa Claus does exist just because he could.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Unless he's yelling at Shelley that she's actually going to die. that's where his morals will flip a little bit. And also, Stephen felt that Jack was crazy from minute one. He was just like, there's no descent into madness here. He starts the movie as insanity.
Already, which,
yeah. Yeah, and I kind of agree with that.
No, it's I don't disagree with the portrayal, that works, but it's shocking to me, because like The Shining is the movie that a lot of people cite as like, oh well, that's, you know, that was Jack Nicholson, one of his huge breaks, and it's like he's comically like mean in the movie, just. Like, Dad, I'm hungry. We're going on this 4-hour trip, and it's 1972 or whatever fucking year it was. Well, you should have eaten your breakfast, shouldn't you? Like,
sounds like it's a your problem kind of thing.
Yeah, like, fuck. Like, sorry, kid, you're gonna starve. Like, fuck you. Like, I would do anything for him. No, you wouldn't, you lying fuck.
But I think that it's interesting how, again, I think Flanagan, like, he somehow makes it work. He makes you believe that. Like, he buys back the utter disbelief at that line in the next movie, where you're like, I believe that the person who can say all that can also love his child, but also just be a raging maniac. You know, like that, I mean, it lies a lot on Henry Thomas's performance in the Gold Room, and the way that he plays Jack, it's just,
oh, wow. Chef's kiss.
Yeah. Entering the match.
Oh, we have an ant.
The ant.
Okay.
He's here.
Now, I am dying to see you commentate wrestling. That was a slice of comedy gold. Oh no, entering the fight. Man.
No, I was trying to do the video what? Game thing, but I don't know video games enough to. It's was the this, meme, you know.
Was this your attempt to be a, like the Street Fighter announcer? Like you're like one step away from being like Joe Pennant.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There he goes.
Tyler.
Entering. Tiger D.
No. Yeah.
So actually, Hunter, this would be something you could talk some about that's horror related. I just watched before we hopped on to start recording the newest gameplay trailer for Dead Space, the remake.
And
I hadn't realized like how much of a remake this looks like it's going to be. Like
they added they fixed my biggest problem with the most insane thing I think about Dead Space, the first one, is that Isaac Clarke doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
He
doesn't?
He is literally you're walking through like a derelict spaceship and he is just killed this membrane gore monsters without saying a word.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
No, it's a game about a man becoming a sociopath.
Yeah, that's what it is. Oh boy, you're it's like so weird.
No,
it looks great. I mean, I'm so excited for this thing.
It does, but I'm worried that like I'm gonna play it and be like, this is just the entire first game. It looks great and it plays great, but it's just the first game again.
Like, yeah,
that's my only concern.
I mean, like I'm kind of the mind if they do that, it's fine because supposedly this is gonna be the jumping off point for they're gonna reboot everything. Maybe it won't. Maybe it won't be the same game.
And like you said, I wouldn't be angry at it if it was the same game. But oh god, please let this be successful. I need this game in my life.
Honestly, for real. They're making Iron Man next, this. So.
Callisto Protocol looks cool as shit, and I kind of want to get
there. Yes.
Yeah.
When does that come out?
That is in December.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was coming up sooner. Arlen, are you familiar with Dead Space at all?
Arlen, 404s.
Arlen, like the queen seeing a black elf evaporated when we started talking about video games.
Video games just fucking disappeared.
Oh no.
No, Callisto Protocol, yeah, I mean, that's like, oh wait, we're getting two Dead Space-like games. Well, one is an official Dead Space game, and the other one is essentially a Dead Space game, because wasn't it created by the same guy who worked on the first Dead Space?
The original creator.
It's literally the original creator, yeah. It's cool, but at the same time, like, there's so many Dead Space-likes coming out, I'm like, alright.
No,
I'll play these two, and then the other ones I'll ignore.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Until a good review of them comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like everything else.
No, but we were talking about Dr. Sleep and The Shining, because I had recently watched The Shining and then Dr. Sleep back to back, and just how much it made me appreciate what they did in Dr. Sleep before.
That was like 6 hours of your life?
No, it wasn't in one day. I'm very old. It took two nights. Oh. So, yeah.
I imagine you had your like your sleeping cap on, and you had your walk around your house like an old candle.
That is how I imagine Eric usually. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm thinking it's more like the father in that fucking Christmas poem. From the rooftop came such a clatter that I'm that guy.
You are absolutely a character that's just in an apartment in Moby Dick. If you just looked up in a window, it's like, yeah, that's you. Yeah.
Eric is Dickensian.
Well, no, but that wouldn't work because I would be dead already if it was Dickensian time.
That's true. The time.
Yeah.
That is true.
I would be the oldest man in the country that I live in. So
true. Or Jack the Ripper. One of the two.
We can't rule it out. We can't rule it out.
I mean, can we rule that out?
Anything's possible.
Hunter knows something about that, being the Zodiac Killer and all.
yeah, but we don't talk about that.
Oh, that's not good. Also Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's insulting to me. You know.
You had to go. Your kids were there. I do want to on the Dr. Sleep Shining thing. It's interesting. That was kind of my experience when the movie came out, because I, and maybe I'm compressing time, pre-pandemic stuff and all that.
No, nobody does that.
What? I distinctly remember seeing The Shining in a theater, and I think in the exact same theater, maybe a couple weeks later, seeing Dr. Sleep.
Okay, that would still be enough, though, because, seeing Dr. Sleep would, like, be such a revelation the first time that it would awaken all that stuff. So, yeah, I can see that.
And that was an experience, seeing them in that close succession and being, you know, and the two memories are heavily interlinked for me. The experience of that and the emotions of that were very strong, and I do think I had to see the movie a couple times to just appreciate it on its own merit. I said this, I think, on your post about it. Like, I do miss Flanagan doing movies. The only people I can blame are the people at Warner Brothers. And it's not even the current administration. It's like
two administrations back or something.
When the next administration seizes all water in California, they'll make when Nestle buys Warner Brothers
you mean Nestle, the subsidiary of Disney, buys Warner Brothers?
And they make propaganda films about Batman, like, you know, hunting down thieves who steal corporate water.
This was something I actually did want to talk a little bit about, just because I know Arlen, like, you were able to agree with what I had said about it, but we didn't really get to discuss it much. Movie I watched the day after Dr. Sleep was Jacob's Ladder. Have you seen that, Hunter and Connor? I imagine you
have. I love that movie.
Hunter, have you?
I've kind of been, like, dancing around it because it inspired Silent Hill, essentially. Yes. So
yes, you should. Mm-hmm. You should. And honestly,
I just watch it.
Just having rewatched it recently, like, it is definitely freaky if you're not into horror movies. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's pretty harmless. Like, it's like, oh god, freaky thing. All right, now let's spend the next, like, 20 minutes to half an hour, like, just dealing with, like, domestic shit. Oh god, freaky thing. And then
there are moments where it becomes full tilt horror, but it sort of pulls itself back. But those moments are very, very, very freaky.
Well, yeah, I don't it know, goes Eric, from like, just, like still... nightmare fuel to very contemplative in like a couple beats.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like I was reminded when I was watching that the AMC 101 horror things just on the background. And I was eating, and they got to that club scene where the woman is, like, getting, like, fucked by a demon or whatever. And I was like, nice. Well, that's enough. Guess I'm putting that in the fridge for later.
And that's the other thing, like, the movie came out in what, like, 90 something? Was it late 80s? I think. It was 91?
If I'm getting the director right, it's like it's made on the clout of Fatal Attraction.
I was just gonna say, like, the special effects that are in it, they work so well because they're so simple. There's nothing that you ever see that's like, dear Jesus, that's the most horrific thing I've ever seen, because they don't let you spend any time on anything for too long. And that's definitely where the Silent Hill thing came from.
You can't, like, look at things critically, because it's just so wispy, I guess, is the best word I can think to describe it. It's so, like, out of focus. It's that sort of, you know, seeing something in the corner of your eye. Yep.
100%
kind of thing. It is
it's that type of dread that's in the movie Hunter. So I don't like I said. How dare you disagree with me?
And it is Adrian Lin, the director of this year's Deep Water, where you can see Ben Affleck just killing 20-year-old men and fucking his wife just over and over again.
What?
Just Deep Water. That's the movie where the Ben Affleck Anna de Armas memes come from. And their long relationship. But yeah, that's where that comes from. And that's a film where things happen.
But with Jacob's Ladder, the thing I wanted to bring up was that I chose to watch that because I felt in ways thematically it really connected with Dr. Sleep. And like, it's not anything I can put my finger on, but it was just like, no, these kind of vibe together really well. I don't know if anybody else thinks that who's seen both of them recently or is super familiar with either of them.
I haven't seen either in a long enough time to not really have anything to say about that.
Gotcha.
Similar. I don't remember enough, but I think that there's certain like larger themes about death and the weight of death and what that actually means that I can see why, you know, why you would do one as a response to the other, right? Yeah.
All right. No, I think that does definitely put a finger on it much better than I could come to, because I was just like, I don't know, there's doctors and it's spooky.
Well, yeah, because I couldn't say like it's a plot thing. Like the plots couldn't be further apart, and like the perspective of the movie on the afterlife couldn't be different. And like, you know, and paranormal events and high strangeness and all that, like they couldn't be more further apart, but it's more thematic stuff that I can definitely see connecting. Well, to things.
Doctors are liars. So obviously like,
right. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And they were being lied to in Jacob's Ladder. It all connects, man. I see the lines connecting everything.
Also just trauma, just trauma and the way that trauma impacts us and how we deal with horrific situations, which is actually a good segue and kind of a wrap back around. I do want to talk about a movie that I feel like I've been shouting at all of you to watch for the last year. And I'm just going to say one final point on that. And if,
That's what? True.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does yell at me a lot.
Yeah, I yell
at him. He's very abusive. He's abusive.
I yell at Hunter because he's so tall, though. And I need to
hear it.
Well, yeah, it's the idea of like yelling at a mountain or a tree. You know, it doesn't affect you. But now when the tree or mountain has feelings, you don't know how to feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just gotta be careful, you know? Like,
yeah, words hurt.
Words are breaking up.
You know what? I'm gonna take that into account.
Just because her heart is bigger, like five times bigger than yours, doesn't mean it can't break, you know?
No, that's a good point. It's a good point there. So, have any of you gotten around to seeing No One Gets Out Alive?
No.
No One Gets Out Alive. I might have watched that. I need to see what the cover looks like, whatever.
What is your Rotten Tomatoes score? Because I don't watch anything above 50.
I'm gonna murder you. I'm going to rip your large beating heart out and then transplant it into an elephant.
Into an elephant?
I was getting that confused. There was I'd seen the trailer for No One Gets Out Alive around the same time that I saw the movie about the woman who goes to Mexico and goes through like a bruja ritual with possession. It was around the same time, so I could never remember which one was which. So no, I did not see No One Gets Out Alive.
Okay, they do have similar things going on. So No One Gets Out Alive, I really loved it. I was very impressed by it. I thought that a lot of it was, you know, to what I was saying about themes, like the themes of it were interesting. I thought the cast and the directing was striking. I'm very fascinated to see what this director does next. And then, you know, circling back to the beginning of our conversation, it is based off of source material from the writer of the original The Ritual book. And it is also produced by David Bruckner. Yes. And it is as close to a sequel to The Ritual as will ever exist, I think, based off
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. How many fucked up deer demons are in this one?
Exactly.
Well, there's not a deer demon, but like, and I was very cagey last year because I wanted you guys to watch the movie, but now I don't give a shit.
Evidently, we don't either, so go ahead.
I would call it a sibling of the deer demon is the sort of hidden secret of the movie. And it's dealing with a lot of similar themes. It's just doing like the inversion of The Ritual. The Ritual is a bunch of rich people going into the forest intentionally to deal with suffering. This is a movie about a woman from like Guatemala, I think, Central American country, who goes to Chicago to find a better life. And she finds herself living in a place full of women who can't get green cards. They have to live there because the only place that takes cash, and as tends to happen in real life, that's a place where people get taken advantage of a lot.
Hilarious.
It's all again an inversion of The Ritual. If I could really think of one, that's what it would be. It would be someone who has to put themselves in this situation, doing so and dealing and going through similar things with trauma. She's likewise with the characters, lead characters of The Ritual. She lost her lost a family member, that trauma haunts her, and it's what sort of allows her to see through what's going on. And yeah, it's just it uses a lot of the same things that are established in The Ritual, and it's so close thematically, visually, and in the filmmaking that if you cut the two films together, you'd be like, okay, this fits completely, this entirely makes sense, it feels like it's part of the same universe in the best possible way. And yeah, I'm really surprised nobody's talked about the movie. It doesn't get the same amount of attention. A year later, I feel like I'm the only one that remembers that this movie happened. So yeah.
Well, Arlen, you keep talking about this movie. I don't find anything on the internet about it.
It's weird. This is the first time I remember you bringing this up at all, actually. Like,
yeah, it's kind of odd. Actually,
what is strange.
What were you even talking about? I don't really remember.
Wait, who's Arwen?
He's laying out there.
He's just turning to dust in front of us.
I am actually going in and out, though, because I have to be up at 4 a.m. tomorrow.
Oh, God. Ooh. Okay. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, we should probably wrap up.
Yeah, Hunter came in.
I was going to do a bit, but then he said the thing about 4 a.m., so I guess I'm back now. I guess the bit is over. I was going to do a whole thing. So people go out there and watch the movie. Tell me I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this movie's bad.
Tell Aaron he's wrong.
Tell me a year later that I'm wrong about this movie that I was very impressed by. And again, nobody talks about this. The Ritual, 5 years later? Now, 6 years later, almost, people still talk about
it. Oh my God, has it really been 6 years? Holy shit.
I think it's pretty close.
God, I fucking hate time.
Time is bad. Fuck time. But yeah, like, I still, people bring it up all the time in reference to David Bruckner, usually. But like, nobody talks about this movie, and go watch it. And then, you know, normal suggestions that I give every year around this time or whenever we talk about this, go watch His House if you haven't seen it. Very similar themes to No One Gets Out Alive. Go watch L.U.Z., which is a very interesting demon possession movie that is worth y'all's time. So yeah, go watch that. And then a movie that I put in the chats a while ago, maybe a week or two or so, you are not my mother.
What?
I don't. Yeah, it's when you look at the trailer and you look at the poster, like, okay, I know what this is gonna be.
Remake of that? I think it's a German movie. The two little kids. Twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's Good Night Mommy. This is a movie about a girl or a teenage girl who was dealing with some stuff. She's got a a mother who's a little bit not sane.
All right, cool.
Yeah, and she
everything's going great in this movie.
Tell me more about what my business team was going through.
God damn it. But she, her mother just goes missing one day. She just disappears. And she comes back a little bit weird. And that's all I'll say.
Interesting. Okay.
It goes from there. It's Ireland killing it. Just making a lot of movies about one subject in particular that they really seem to like, but I don't mind because they usually make it at least compelling or interesting or visually striking. So yeah, You Are Not My Mother. Very, very interesting little horror movie.
Connor, before you evaporate into dust for the evening, do you have any suggestions for people? Yeah, exactly.
Just watch Hellraiser. Watch Hellraiser. Okay. Feel so good to be optimistic about a Hellraiser movie.
Yeah. The only things I wanted to suggest were The Mist. Go watch the black and white version of that. It's so good in black and white. Holy fuck.
That movie has a fucking raw as hell ending.
Yes, it does.
And the rawest of all.
The fact that Stephen King was even like, damn it, I should have thought of that.
Yeah, goddamn.
Yeah. Probably going to also watch The Invitation again, because that movie is fucking great. And that was a surprise. It's got not Tom Hardy in it.
Logan Marshall Green.
Yes.
Eric is enough of a Machiavellian that he said that to prompt me to say it because he knew that I would say it.
Eric playing 4D chess on the podcast.
And the other thing that's like kind of a left field choice, but I don't give a fuck, I fucking love this movie, is Constantine. Like that straddles enough horror stuff in it that I'm like, yeah, this falls into category. And
the movie I forgot I watched.
That movie is great. It's so good. Yeah. And I feel like there are people starting to realize that now. Like, I mean, I've seen a couple articles on Polygon, so it must be important. But yeah, it's so fucking good. It's so good. Just if you know the Hellblazer comics, just act like you don't when you watch it. It's fun.
Yeah, and on that note, like, I understand why, like, the old school nerds in 2005 were against it, but like, we've had enough time now. They've made good comic book movies. They've made good adaptations of the character Constantine since then. Like, just let this one exist and be happy that it exists and that it's good. It's very good. So get the stick out of your ass, old school nerds who are like, but that's not my Constantine.
Constantine. That's about it for me. I'm excited to check out Werewolf by Night and the Flanagan young adult fucking adaptation. Curious how that's gonna go.
Yep. Oh, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
The sheriff is in it, so that's good.
I have a prediction. A hand is gonna get stepped on or mangled in some way.
You know, Hunter, that's almost an easy prediction to make, some could say, that something bad will happen to a hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old Mikey's favorite.
I can't wait for a 13-year-old to get irrevocably fucked up by it. They're just like, oh, this will be fun. And then, no, oh, God, no. Oh. Yeah, so that'll be, that'll be nice.
So does anyone have any plugs they want to drop?
Nope.
You can go listen to Comedy Club if you want, or you can crossover text.
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah.
We talk about Final Fantasy 14 a lot, and we argue about Assassin's Creed.
Of course, nothing new there.
I'll plug LHP. We're back. We're doing stuff again. We Stalker came out not too long ago. Go listen to an hour of us talking about Tarkovsky, and then get ready because we're in the spooky season, and we're also going to be watching the horror films. So yeah, go check that out. We're doing some Italian stuff. Not the previously mentioned cannibal movies. Not pasta. But the other Italian stuff.
You're doing some of that Jello horror stuff. That
yes,
they
we're
do.
Doing the Jello horror.
Yeah, Jello horror, Italian Jello movement.
That's how you spell it, man.
Hey, I cook every good horror movie. Hey.
Hey, and my other plug is everybody download Overwatch 2 so that Hunter can get into Madness.
Yeah. thank you appreciate that, Alan. Hey, for coming up.
You can just keep playing against bots. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. It's just as good. Stop whining.
I can pretend I'm good at Overwatch.
Exactly. I guess with that, we can say goodnight to everybody.
Bye.
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 Bye, everybody.